Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea's sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
I don't,
yes.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Welcome to Giles Corran Has No Idea. It's called this not because I literally know nothing, but because it's all about the moment in the week when I have to sit down and write my column but have absolutely no idea what to write it about. Which is where my wife Esther comes in, who, having read all the papers whilst I take the kids to school, always has half a dozen ideas picked out for me when I get back to be discussed at the kitchen table over a nice cup of coffee.
I was calling you and you were calling me and it was...
So this is a bit weird, isn't it, Giles?
This is quite weird. I think it's very clear early on that we make it clear to our listeners that I am not in the kitchen.
No, and it's quite odd because you sort of are in the kitchen because you're on a FaceTime call on my laptop.
But as it stands, I am in Bavaria blowing some food off my laptop because it's my lunch break. And I'm filming, but the thing is, we just got fed up with having these gaps in the podcast because everyone says, oh, it's a podcast. You have to be every week. People expect you to be there. You can't go on holiday. So although I have to be here in Bavaria filming a show about hotels for the BBC, we wanted to do a podcast. So here I am. It's my lunch break in the middle of filming. I just filmed a scene in a bookshop. And later on, I've got to walk up a mountain in snowshoes and cook a fondue for some guests while dressed in lederhosen. And I've got an hour and a half off where I'm eating a veggie burger, because, of course, I am vegan until 6 p.m. And we are going to try and do it. And I'm going to write a column because, contrary to what you might have heard about BBC salaries, I can't afford to just make TV. I have to also do the day job. So I've not really got any papers here. I've seen some editions of the Times iPad edition, which is great. But I find it hard to navigate around a newspaper if I can't hold it in my hands. Yeah. And I'm worried I might have missed things. And I'm really hoping that my wife Esther, who is both you and her in regards to the audience out there, I'm hoping, Esther, that you can come up with an idea or help me to come up with an idea for a column which I will try and write in my dinner break.
The papers haven't been rich in subjects for you particularly. There's a lot in the papers at the moment, but possibly not anything that leapt out to me as a...
It's going to be better, my darling, than whatever is in the Frankfurt Allgemeine today.
Yes,
The Zeitung für Deutschland, for example. Söder, CDU muss schnell now ein Parteivorsitzenden bestimmen. It's an interesting story, but I can't see the humour there.
What is the story? My German just simply isn't good enough.
Oh, it's the Zeitplan abwegig, says Kramp-Karrenbauer, müssen uns kleinen Stress machen. It's just that sort of stuff. Nach der Rücktrittsankündigung der CDU-Vorsitzenden Annegret... Anyway, that story, who knows, Matthew Paris might do that. So I might do the one below, which is Bischofskonferenz sucht neuen Vorsitzenden. Now, a bischof is going to be a bishop, and a conference is going to be a conference.
Oh, my God, it's a conference of bishops.
It's a conference of bishops, sucht neuen Vorsitzenden. They're looking for new whatever Vorsitzes are.
Yeah.
In the stand first.
Hats?
Yeah. So.
So whatever that is.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Have you got anything better than that?
There was one thing that struck me as absolutely classic you column fodder, but it's the kind of column that I don't want you to write. So from the Times on Tuesday, archaeologists have discovered Iron Age bone fragments.
I like it.
Yeah, underneath student accommodation. In...
Oh, my God. Yeah, oh, my God.
In...
Caveman students.
In the north, I haven't written down...
Oh, fuck, you never write it down. I actually need you this week. You can't have that half-remembered story
Sorry.
From the paper you've thrown away.
No, I haven't thrown the paper away, but unfortunately my laptop is actually resting on the stack of newspapers. So, but it's in, like, what's that place that's near Newcastle, beginning with D?
Oh, God! What do you mean that place is near Newcastle? You mean Grimsby?
Durham. It's in Durham. Durham. Okay. Yeah. So archaeologists have discovered Iron Age bone fragments underneath student accommodation in Durham. A discovery done at a team at Durham University unearthed... it has not been possible to determine age or sex, blah, blah, blah. When we got to... Blah, blah, blah. This adds to our knowledge of the history of Durham, showing that people were living and dying here long before the well-known medieval occupation of the city. The bones are too vulnerable to be displayed, but their discovery is explored with other finds in a 2,000 years exhibition at the University Museum of Archaeology. That's the entire story. It's not a very long story.
It's quite interesting. It could go along with the big story this week, which I had half thought about writing about, which is about universities sending back looted treasures. Did you see that?
Oh, well, they're always doing that, aren't they?
Yeah, so basically, this week there's been a story about universities... have been sending back looted treasures.
Yeah.
And there's an argument about whether they should be or not. Well, but while the big museums are not, the universities, as we know, who are sort of riddled with snowflakes and very worried about the kind of cultural appropriation thing, are sending stuff. There's the famous Benin bronze at that college. You know, there's the whole debate about the Elgin marbles. Is there any reason why modern Athens should have more claim to it than modern London? And the university is sending things back. And it's I suppose there's a thing about at last that Durham University can display some bones that actually belong to...
Yes, exactly. They finally got some stuff of their own. Yes, here we go. So the Times, Monday, page 7, University Museum are accepting most repatriation requests from overseas for relics taken in contentious circumstances. I mean, when are they not taken in contentious circumstances? I mean, I suppose it's a gift, but then...
Yeah. But it's just like, supposing we send it all back, what will we have to put in our college museums? Basically, little bits of old bone from underneath student digs.
Well, I remember in the Jorvik Viking Museum in York, which I went to when I was about 11 years old and made a huge impression on me, they had an entire wall of poo, of like fossilised, sort of ossified poo. And this told us all sorts of interesting things about the Vikings and the indigenous people of York at the time, which was they ate mostly vegetables. Anyway, maybe that's what will be left in our university museums is old bits of poo and bits of skull.
So when all the former colonies have taken all back the stuff that we looted from them,
yeah,
we'll have nothing to put on the walls but shit. Well, if we look, so there's a possibility I could do like student digs in the Roman period. Like Geordie student digs in the Roman period.
Yeah.
Or maybe I won't do that. But also I was thinking if I were doing the things that we have to send back to the colonies and abroad because we looted them, but we quite like to keep them, we've got to send them back. What about the things we would like to send back that
right.
we've got? And one has to be very careful because it mustn't be about immigration or repatriation of things or like send them all home.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, like, for example, we have a lot of kind of didgeridoos and Australian Aboriginal bones, which they want back. And I was thinking, if the Australians are going to take back that stuff, would they also take back those sentences that go up at the end?
Can they also have back all of those stupid number plates that say Australia on them that everybody buys in Australia and then brings back to the UK? Those can all go back. Then that's a very good idea. But there's a limit to the number of countries who you can say or send it back to them. You can't be xenophobic, basically, except to the Australians. That's basically the only.
I can be a bit xenophobic.
All right, go on then.
Everybody loves a bit. The whole skill of my column is to be xenophobic but not racist. Just to get to some jokes out here. I'm thinking, if Australia want to have back the bones of their ancestors and the didgeridoos, then they've got to take back Foster's Lager.
Yeah.
They've got to take back barbecues.
Yes.
They've got to take back wife beaters, you know, they've got to take back stupid singlet events. They've got to take back all those vertical drinking places.
Yep.
Those muscle-bound blokes. And they've got to take up, and those sentences that go up at the end, mm-hmm. which nobody had ever heard until they had them on Neighbours, and now everybody talks like that, and now the whole world is coming to end, and now British people all sound really stupid, and everybody talks, and it drives me up the fucking wall.
Yeah.
They've got to go back, and if they take those back and they promise that nobody ever talks like that anymore, then they can have back their stupid fucking bones.
Okay. Is this just going to be Australia, though? Because if it's only Australia, that's fine.
No, there's other places.
Yeah, but how do you do them, though, darling? There isn't really a way of doing that without being just massive.
Okay.
Let me get the story and go through who wants what back, okay? The returning of Maori skeletons to New Zealand. If they want them back, the New Zealand...
They've got to take back the flat white.
And bungee jumping as well. They've got to take that back.
Is that for... Wait, what?
Is it bungee jumping originated in New Zealand, didn't it? Or is that what they mostly do?
Did it or didn't it?
I'm pretty sure. I'm really sure it did.
If it did, it's a great joke. If not, it's so irrelevant and embarrassing. Do you think?
Yes.
Or are you just thinking it's because it's stupid, it's probably from New Zealand?
No, I'm really sure that it originated in New Zealand. Come on.
No, Bristol.
Oh!
Could have guessed.
Really?
The first modern bungee jumps were made on the 1st of April 1979.
In Bristol?
The etymology from a West Country dialect of English. So, nice try, though.
Thanks. Here we go. Who else? Okay, so the Greeks. Okay, you can be possibly a bit mean about the Greeks. So they want the Elgin marbles back. Okay, if you want the Elgin marbles back, that's fine. You also have to take with you...
Feta cheese! You've got to take back feta cheese and teeny-weeny little salty black olives and wine that tastes of IKEA furniture.
Yes, okay, fine. No, they're not very good at making wine, it's true. Okay, this is great. Look, this is a really good column, actually.
Wait, I've got to write them down. I'm sorry, I'm chewing. I'm still eating my lunch.
It's fine. No, look. Okay, Hawaii wrote to Oxford requesting the return
of
funerary heirlooms from the Pitt Rivers Museum. If you want those back, you have to take with you...
Surfing, because surfing is for wankers.
And Hawaiian shirts.
Hawaiian shirts,
have
yes.
those back. Have those back.
You know what this column is? This is a column that I call just racist enough. It's because, like, a Hawaiian, like, that's not a thing. I mean, like, Polynesian people that respect and stuff, but Hawaii is just a state in America.
Look, I think that's a great column. I think the readers will love it. I think it could be really, 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 really mega, mega funny. And I think that it would be quite easy to write as well. Okie dokie. So another story that I thought was really funny was in the Times on Monday about wealthy foreigners buying their sort of little fiefdoms in England. And it just struck me as very, very funny. So Savills, which are the big estate agency, said that in recent years, they've seen a significant increase in farms over 500 acres being sold to overseas buyers. Okay. And the most famous example of this is Stefan Persson, who is 72, and he is the Swedish billionaire who owns H&M, which is a massive clothing chain. He owns 19,000 acres in Wiltshire, Berkshire and Hampshire. Other people who've done this include...
19,000 acres?
Other buyers include, I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, Urs Schwarzenbach, who is also...
No one's heard of any of them, so I won't name any of them anyway.
Fine, okay. He's a Swiss financier who paid £38 million for the Hambledon estate in Buckinghamshire, which has got 44 houses, a pub, a shop... and 1,600 acres. And there are other examples. Now, what struck me as funny about this is the idea that you have, like, it's the innate hilarity of somewhere like Poundbury, which is Prince Charles's, like, toy village, or Celebration, which is the Disney toy village in America somewhere that I can't remember exactly where it is. Like, the H&M village. I mean, like, what would the H&M village... The IKEA village. I just thought there was something really, really... I wasn't quite sure how you could quite turn it into a column, but it struck me as just a really funny image, these kind of foreign, really wealthy kind of nutters buying these villages in England without really any sense of... what they are or what's going on or...
Yes.
Yeah? No.
Well...
Someone says Nick Mead, partner at Sterling Private Office, who's a property company, says the global rich are getting more and more sophisticated and want to push the boundaries from just having a big shiny flat in London. They buy these things because they enjoy the English way of country life. They like the idea of having their own personal fiefdom.
Okay, fine. The way you would do that is I would set myself up as a state agent selling villages to foreigners.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I would then present the brochure and I would probably try and sell them somewhere shit like Boughton-on-the-Water or local village. Or okay. I might give Boughton a break because I have taken the piss out of it before.
You have,
but there's
a lot,
something about, you know, all traditional things go on in this pub, such as
yes, pies,
alcoholism, racist drinking, yes, underage pregnancy, unwanted heroin dealing, county lines.
Well, you could write it in that. You could write it in that hilarious estate agent speak as well.
Oh, benefits from a piss stinking bus stop with loads of those little canisters of helium. Yes, that's actually, God, you took a long time to get to the bottom of reeling that thing out, but in the end, yes.
That's not a very nice thing to say to me, darling, when I've done all this work for you.
Well, I just didn't know what you were talking about. You were sort
well,
of,
maybe you should concentrate harder. You never know what I'm talking about. You never know what I'm talking about. You have to wait to the end of the story. You never know what I'm talking about because you're so impatient and stupid.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Villages to billionaires. Okay, thank you. That's good. I've got another one that's vaguely estate agency that I saw. Did you see that story that it's the death knell of the mega basement?
Yes, I did. I did. I thought that would gladden your heart.
Well, I mean, we all hate mega basements.
We hate them so much for so many reasons.
Just the vanity of them.
Yeah.
We live in an area where the property prices, the price per square foot, is not quite high enough for it to pay back, to dig under. But the moment you get out from where we live in Kentish Town to the likes of Primrose Hill, Belsize Park, Hampstead Garden Suburb, there you're in places where the price per square foot means if you spend £1 million digging out a floor under your house, it's worth more than £1 million. And so they all bloody do it. And you can't get around, you can't drive anywhere. Rich people live in this hell that all around them, however much money they've spent on their house, there's just digging. It's just awful. And they fight. Anyway, and they're stopping because it's the rich are now fed up with the hassle of fighting their neighbours.
Because what rich people love to do when there's a fight about their property is to call their lawyers. It's what they really, really like is suing each other about these things. And I'm hugely tickled, and I knew that you would be too, about the fact that it's got so bad that not even the ultra wealthy, who just love a ding dong, they love a fight, they love winning in court. I'm gonna see you in court, you know. They love that so much. They're the most pugnacious breed of people on the planet. And even they're sick of all the fighting. So it must be
bad. Absolutely. The photo that they used, obviously, of Robbie Williams. And you remember Robbie Williams? He's been in that fight with Jimmy Page about... Because he bought that Michael Winner house that we went to when Winner lived there.
Which is do you remember how big that house was? It was... why would you need any more space in that house? That house was like a... It was like a castle. It was the...
When we went and watched a film in Winner's cinema, which is easily as big as the Empire Leicester Square. No, because Williams has moved in and wants to dig a swimming pool... and Jimmy Page said, oh no, it'll make my house fall down.
Yeah.
And all these things that used to have these rather pucker rich people in now just have these stupid rock stars showing off about their money.
Yeah.
And in the end, in order to be allowed to dig his swimming pool, did you see this? Because it was fascinating. Jimmy Page's lawyers came up with a thing that he's allowed to have his swimming pool, but it has to be dug using hand tools. Okay,
right.
So he's not allowed to use drills. So he's got like 10,000 Polish people there, literally like in the Shawshank Redemption,
yeah,
with tiny, weeny little chisels digging down into the bedrock of Kensington. And he's going to put this pool in. He's also had to set up a fund, like put millions of pounds into a fund to pay for Jimmy Page's reconstruction should his house fall down as a result.
What, and he's and still going ahead with it? What a weirdo.
Yes. What? Yeah, he's literally, there's people down there digging at holes with their teeth because they're not allowed to make any noise for Jimmy Page.
But how are you going to, this is all very amusing, highly amusing to me, and to both of us, because we hate those digging people in basement stuff so much. But how are you going to turn this into a column?
Well, so I'm saying if rich people are no longer going to, because they build these basements with millions of pounds to show off how rich they are, if they're not allowed to build basements, what will they spend their money on instead?
Villages in Northamptonshire.
Genius. Okay, sorry, it has to type link to villages on my column. You're quite right. That would be that the piece would go together. You start off with that, saying how insane it is, make some jokes about that, then link to new thing to do. They're buying villages instead. Brilliant. Yeah. I was going to just suggest other comedy things, like just like what would, if Robbie Williams is not allowed to show how rich he is by digging a new house under his house, what would he buy instead? A flock of rhinos. Possibly a herd of rhinos. Or they could, like, a bobsleigh run, a dairy farm, you know? It's like, what are the things? He could just make a helter-skelter.
A flock of rhino. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me now?
Again.
Oh.
No.
Hello? Hello? No, no, make your jokes, darling, and then I've got one final story. And then we've got to go, and let me tell you why, because I've got to write a piece for tomorrow. I've got to write a piece by 2 o'clock.
Who are you writing a piece for?
For T2. Yay!
About what?
About tablecloths.
Oh, I saw that story about having a tablecloth makes soup taste saltier.
No, it makes soup taste better.
Dimmer lighting makes the soup taste saltier.
Exactly. Yes. So they want. So this is a double whammy for our podcast listeners. If Lucy leads us in, because on Friday they will not only get the story behind your column, they will get the story behind my piece on tablecloths, which is going to be in T2 tomorrow.
On Thursday, so they'll have already read the story, and
they'll be like, "Oh my god, that's really weird." Esther was just sitting there writing about how she's going to write about tablecloths, and now I just read that stupid piece about tablecloths.
Oh, it's like Back to the Future.
Yeah.
You go back, Esther will go back and see herself writing her piece and cancel herself out.
Exactly. All right, I've got a sore throat now. I've got to go and write my piece. Go away, go and eat some sausages. Your lunch break must be over.
I have to go and put on literal lederhosen and hike up the Bavarian mountains to make a fondue for some hotel guests.
Well, that's a visual.
You've been listening to Giles Corran Has No Idea with me, Giles Corran.
And me, Esther Walker.
It's a Times podcast produced by Lucy Ditchmont. If you want to find out what I wrote about in the end, there's a link to the column in the podcast description. Please like
and subscribe
wherever it is you get your podcasts and never miss an episode. And for the full live experience, you can tune into my radio show every Sunday night from 7 to 10 p.m. on Talk Radio.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com, code program.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.